Welcome to the DOPA podcast, fueling conversations around creative wellness and turning negative barriers into positive tools for mental success. Brought to you by the Department of Proactiveness and your host, Alex Normanton. Joining me today is Alec Teer, independent designer and lettering artist based in Amsterdam. We discuss how to break through mental brick walls and practical tools on how to generate better ideas within the creative process. So Alec, here we are. We're in the heart of the city, just round the corner from the Anne Frank Museum.
Yep.
In Amsterdam.
Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Pleasure.
Thanks for making the time this afternoon. I feel really bad because we're sat inside on quite a hot day when the sun is shining and we haven't seen the sun for quite a while.
Yeah.
And here we are with the curtains shut. It's going to get warm.
Yeah.
But hopefully it's a warm conversation.
Nice.
See what I did there?
Very nice. Well, yeah, it's literally the day everyone's been waiting for.
And we decided to record inside.
Yeah. What's another day indoors after a year and a half of it?
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you for your time, making the time. I know you're a very busy designer and lettering artist. Also to congratulate you, the day after the DNAD award show results, you have a wooden pencil.
Yes. Well, thanks very much. It's a pleasure to have you here, by the way. I think the stuff you're doing is brilliant and the conversations that you're having are very, you know, relevant and important. So that's great. And yeah, thanks for the congratulations. Very exciting. For the first project I did as a freelancer, having left my job of 7 years. So it's very rewarding to be recognized.
We met a while ago. You came into Design Bridge to show your book to myself and the ECD at the time. My recollection of that afternoon was just blown away, actually. It's probably one of the best books I've ever seen in my life. From a designer. The quality, the level of depth, the thinking, the craft, it's unbelievable. I'm excited to chat to you today about this topic. I'm also excited to talk to you, someone who's actually a fellow northerner from the UK.
I'm actually from a town called Beverley.
Okay, so that's near Leeds.
Yeah, it's about 40 minutes from Leeds. It's close to Hull. It's kind of one of the little towns outside of Hull and kind of on the way to York. So it's in this kind of middle zone.
Yeah.
But I've not got much of a northern accent, so you'd never really be able to.
Well, I can pick it up.
Not a strong northern accent.
It's not too far away, Beverley, I don't think, from Halifax, which is where I'm originally from. And certainly on the nicer side, I would say, going towards York countryside.
Hills.
Hills are always good because I miss the hills being in Amsterdam for sure.
Absolutely.
And just want to say that Halifax is a lovely place. But compared to where you're from, I think you win.
Oh, really?
But also, we attended the same university. So the University of Northumbria in Newcastle upon Tyne.
Yes, yes, a great university.
Yeah, incredible. And what year were you there, actually?
2013 is when I left. So, yeah, I think I started in 29. No, not 29. 2009. Okay.
29.
Back in 29 AD.
Yeah, when people were just using stone tablets. And that's when you honed all your skills with the humble rock and a piece of granite.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Maybe you should ask me the question again.
When were you at University of Northumbria? What year?
I was there in 2009 and graduated in 2012, 2013.
And was that a graphic design degree or illustration? Or
we were kind of the first or second year to kind of try out a new program where you specialized in a specific area of graphic design. So it was branding, publishing or illustration.
And from there you went straight to JKR.
Yeah, I vowed to never go live in London because I hated it, having never been there. We took a trip down to London, I think in the second or third year, and we went to kind of a few studios. Mm-hmm. Just realized how exciting the city was and not scary it was to see, you know, design studios down there. It just kind of blew my mind. So then went to London, did the kind of DNAD new blood thing, put our kind of portfolios on show and managed to get an interview at JKR, which followed to a job, which was great.
As most people say, that your education starts again then.
Everything you think you know, you don't. And you just have to start all over again. But it's brilliant and really healthy, I think, to be put in your place.
Here to talk about how to mentally navigate from brick walls to breakthrough this afternoon.
Mm.
I think if we're talking about brick walls, they can tend to have various different themes associated to them. So it could be creative block, feeling mentally paralyzed and don't know what to do, feeling trapped maybe within a circumstance or a place of work, or even restrained within current role or a current project you're working on. Can you describe some of the brick walls that you've encountered within your own life, and why does this connect to you as an individual?
Well, yeah, like as you said, there's brick walls in so many aspects of what we do as creatives, and that's why this podcast is so interesting, because it's not really talked about that much, and it's actually such a big factor in the way we work, and in a very small scale when we're kind of coming up with ideas, but in a very large scale when we're making, you know, big life decisions and we've got these brick walls in front of us. The way brick walls kind of affect me in the kind of long term, I would say, is more down to kind of always wanting to progress and what's next and how can I do the next job better? What am I going to do next in my career, essentially? I get this thing where I'll be at a stage in my life and I'll be kind of enjoying it and, you know, doing well. And then I'll just hit this kind of brick wall, let's say, which is me realizing that I want to do something different, and I've maybe gained a lot of what I can gain from this time in my life, and I want to kind of break past it and break through and just discover something new and progress my own abilities to a different corner, I suppose. And I think probably the most relevant example of this is me deciding 2 years ago to leave my job at JKR, where I was there for 7 years, but kind of leaving there to kind of go do something completely different and almost break through this wall, which is my comfort zone, into something completely new and different and unknown.
And have you always had that innate appetite, should we put it like that, to break out of a comfort zone? Where do you think that originates from?
I've always been very kind of ambitious and, you know, even back at school, kind of always wanting to kind of break my comfort zone and do something different. And I think I've got quite a kind of short creative attention span maybe. And I just always want to be kind of, you know, pushing things and changing. And, you know, you then go to college and you get kind of comfortable there, and then you go to university and you get comfortable there, and then you get a job. So there's just the world you live in is very, you know, makes you kind of this way, I think, you know, when you're an ambitious designer. Mm-hmm. But also I think it's to do with smaller things than just kind of changing big positions in your life. You know, it's down to things like the endorphins that you get from succeeding at something that's difficult. I think, you know, starting my job was, you know, such a big thing. And when I started there, I was actually, you know, quite a shy kid, really, and didn't like kind of talking in front of people and was nervous about presenting and just generally very quiet. And I kind of slowly kind of broke out of my comfort zone and, let's say, presented to some clients or something, which I was dreading. And then it went well. The endorphins and the buzz you get from that is just really addictive. Mm. The more you do that and the more you break your comfort zone, the more you get this buzz and the more you'll move to kind of do it again. And it can kind of get a bit addictive, I think.
So I think actually the more you break out your comfort zone, it gives you mm-hmm. the self-belief. It's not necessarily an addiction, but the more you break out of those comfort zones, it helps you to build your confidence and actually look back at that brick wall that you had to break through to give you a new realization of, I can do this.
I do think the whole thing with breaking these walls and kind of breaking out of comfort zones is all about confidence, because these brick walls only exist in your own mind, don't they? They're not real. Mm-hmm. So once you kind of build confidence in yourself and in your ideas and passion for design, I think that's when you really start to kind of progress and want to break these walls down more. I think confidence is such an important thing.
But also it strikes me that you get the itch when you're in a comfortable place, you're confident in what you're doing. It strikes me you have this itch that you need to change something. And where does that come from, do you think?
I think it mainly comes from just my love for design and creative problem solving, working with new people on new things. Yeah, I do certainly get an itch when I've been doing a certain type of work for an extended amount of time, or I feel like things are coming a lot easier to me. I'm kind of like, why are they coming easy? Like, I should be pushing myself more. I am very kind of focused and ambitious and a perfectionist, and I'm also quite stubborn. So, you know, once I get something in my head, then I'll throw everything into that. So I think it's just my personality and the way I am.
Yeah, about commitment to the idea that you have as well.
Yeah.
And seeing it through.
Yeah, seeing something through. And when it's done, I'm kind of like, okay, what's the next thing? And I want it to be different because I've done that already. So why would I do it again.
So you moved from Newcastle to London, started your first job, worked for 7 years.
Hmm.
You then got the itch, moved to Amsterdam, the hustle of running two things. It started in London, working a full-time job, starting to do freelance projects, mm-hmm. starting an Instagram account. And so at what point did you decide to again break out and go full-time doing your own thing?
This kind of love for, and passion for letters, doing a lot of it in my work. And then I'd been kind of flirting with this idea of setting up an Instagram account to capture this passion for letters that I had. And we were actually talking before about this, and I said how I'd put off setting this account up for about a year. I'd loved this whole side of design that I hadn't really fully embraced, but I was so worried about like what people would think that I didn't set up an account. And when I did and started putting my work out there, the rewards were amazing, and this thing started to build on the side of my full-time job, which was this separate thing, which was where I could kind of really truly express myself and be my own kind of creative director, yeah. I suppose, and just kind of create things that I loved and people were reacting really well to it.
Mm-hmm.
And from here, like, people started to offer me jobs on the side, and so I started getting paid for it as well. It just kind of felt like it was just all happening very organically.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose the downside of like doing this is I essentially was, like, yeah. you say, doing two jobs. I was doing my, you know, 9 till 5 job at JKR, working on some massive brands, and then coming home and sometimes working till 4 in the morning,
yeah.
doing other jobs for, you know, all sorts of different things.
Mm-hmm.
So for about a year, I was kind of doing these two jobs at the same time, until I guess, you know, hit another brick wall, which was potentially burning out, maybe like 3/4 of the way through
yeah.
that kind of last year of London. Just felt like everything was getting too much, and
mm-hmm.
personal life was starting to take a hit. I was just becoming more tired, not sleeping well, just kind of throwing everything into these two yeah. different worlds. And this is where I decided to kind of fully go for it with my lettering art.
So ironically, it was kind of becoming a discomfort zone.
Yes, it was. It's weird though, because I felt very comfortable in the work, but it was the kind of more the impacts that it was having on my life, because the work was going really well for at both sides,
yeah.
But it was kind of fully absorbing everything else.
Yeah,
definitely the right decision to kind of pick one of them and go for it. And because this the lettering art was the kind of new shiny exciting thing that was the unknown, and
yeah.
you know, it could be anything I wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Went for that, and then along comes coronavirus.
The rest is history. And also, I think it's really fun to know that probably your first like was from your mum on Instagram.
Pretty much, yeah. You know, it's very easy to worry about, you know, things on what's my first post going to be, and, you know, worry about it for weeks and then spend ages doing it, and then you do it and it's not even that good and it doesn't matter. No one sees it anyway, and it's just kind of symbolic of a kind of step through the door, and that's the important thing, and just kind of go from there.
And also, I think it was started with the desire to just put out great content and showcase your skills.
Mm.
Not really to have a huge following. Ironically, that's what you have now, and it's being used as a tool to attract clients, collaborations. You're working with clients and agencies all around the world, which I think is phenomenal. Actually, the nervousness that you had at the beginning kind of pales into insignificance now.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm just so glad I kind of did it and didn't kind of wait around for something to happen that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Dive into it with the kind of best intentions, do good work and share it with people, not to get lots of likes and followers, because that's not really important.
So if we're coming back to the topic within the ideation process, and if this is not kept in check mentally, can you explain some factors that contribute to brick walls being built within your mind?
Yeah, if we're talking more about the kind of creative process and the brick walls that we get there, I find maybe brick walls start to emerge when I'm getting sloppy with my time management, maybe, which means spending too long doing something or getting carried away or kind of zoned in as I can do. It's a good way of kind of losing, you know, a whole day,
yeah.
moving vectors around.
Playing.
Yeah.
Playing with no purpose.
Absolutely, yeah. So when I start to see myself doing that, I need to slap myself on the wrist and do something new. So that can be a way that these blocks can start to appear, because usually it means that I'm not doing anything good and I'm just massaging things or whatever. And another thing, which has been a bad one for me this year, is kind of taking on too much stuff. Mm-hmm. When you go into kind of a freelance world and you're kind of working for yourself, the instinct is to just say yes to anything because you don't know when the jobs mm-hmm. are going to stop coming and if they'll even come. So like, yeah. you know, you say yes to everything and then you've got all these commitments spread across lots of different people and it can be quite stressful and, you know, it can make your work not good as well because you're kind of spreading yourself too thin. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that's where these kind of creative blocks can start to appear when, you know, when you're stressed and your mind's elsewhere, you're not properly spending time on what you're meant to be doing.
We're talking about blocks being made in your mind that are stopping you getting from point A to B. That's one thing. But I think there's also a circular loop where you're just going in circles as well. So I think those two things are interlinked.
Mm-hmm.
If you're taking on maybe too much work, then you're not really concentrating on one thing or the other. You're just doing bits and bobs and then diving into another project.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's a loop based circular pattern,
mm-hmm.
I think the blocks start getting put in place where you can't actually break through it or step over it or even go around it because your mind's kind of pulled in too many directions.
Yeah, I do get this. I think the real problem with me specifically is I'm kind of like a highly functioning addict.
Or a machine.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I've trained myself to work under pressure, but that's not necessarily a good thing. So I think I can go for a long time in this high intensity state where I can really like churn stuff out and operate at a good level,
mm-hmm.
even if I'm overwhelmed actually. And it's not until 6 months later of that when you burn out.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a loop. It's also just like a big, long kind of stretch of time. And then I just, probably worse than a loop, because at least you kind of refresh a bit with a loop, whereas this just kind of blows up at the end.
Yeah, well, I guess there's a few models. There's like a long road ahead of you and there's no stopping.
Mm.
There's probably blocks in the way on the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's probably a mini roundabout that you just keep going around for a while because yeah. there's no service station to get off.
Absolutely.
So if we're talking about metaphors,
yeah.
it's long, it's a line, then yeah. there's a circular loop, then there's a block.
Yep.
Maybe it's like the equivalent of Tetris for creative people.
Yeah, absolutely. Something like that. Yeah, yeah. All the analogies work there.
They certainly do. Do you think running into these mental brick walls are completely necessary within the ideation process?
I don't think they're necessary. That doesn't say that they don't appear.
Yeah.
But the reason I say that is because I used to get them a lot more when I was like a junior designer. Mm-hmm. You know, I get them less now. Might be because I'm
more experienced.
More experienced, certainly. And you just train yourself in a way, have a kind of the right process to come up with ideas, and you notice when you're veering off track and
mm-hmm.
and kind of like pull yourself back or change what you're doing. And I don't think they should be necessary. And I think you can train yourself to not fall into these traps.
But maybe just the height of the wall is different.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe they're more of a little speed bump or a ditch
mm.
versus a wall.
Yeah.
The more experience you have, you know how to navigate through it. You've been here before. That happened last time. I can use that as a learning for next time. And so maybe they're not as frequent, let's put it that way.
You know, training yourself and trusting the process. Yeah, learning how to deal with them before they're a problem. Mm-hmm. So if you imagine yourself kind of, you know, driving towards this wall, you can either kind of change direction before you get anywhere near it, because you can predict it's coming,
mm-hmm.
or you could just get right up in there and then crash into it and then try and work out what to do. So I think maybe you just get better at kind of slowly navigating around them before they even become a thing.
Yeah.
What does this actually mean when it comes to like creating things to do that?
Yeah.
My work is very much about creating marks and typography and very kind of like pure graphic design mm-hmm. stuff, like ideas in type. And
yeah.
and even when the job's like a big rebrand or there's much more to it, I always start with like, what's this key kind of idea or this foundation that everything else yeah. can hang off. So I really, really think that tackling all of these walls that could pop up should be done right at the start when you're in this kind of sketchbook phase.
Yeah.
Fully just jump into it and like sketch hundreds of sketches and, you know, try things out. Like little walls will pop up with, you know, certain ideas and you can just avoid them or try something else. You know, this is almost like a kind of playground for, you know, testing and also just thinking, like spending this time at the start of a job where it's all very loose and conceptual. Just like spending most of that time thinking and not just kind of, you know, sketching something that's kind of okay and then just fully throwing everything into it. You know, think about what's going to happen if I develop this one and will it be right? Or
mm-hmm.
what are the challenges going to be if I take forward this idea? Starting to try and predict what's going to happen to this before it happens. And you'll know when you get the one that's right, because out of 1,000 sketches or whatever, there'll be one that you can really see turning into something, and you can, you know, really get behind it, be passionate and confident about it.
Yeah.
Then it'll kind of do itself.
Just don't keep working and working and working to the point where you're getting burnt out,
mm-hmm.
because obviously a lot of brick walls are going to start going up, which isn't healthy for your mind.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is just forecasting ahead before these brick walls start to pop up. That comes from experience.
Mm.
The other thing is to sketch more, to think more offline,
yeah.
rather than jumping on the Mac to think for you, which will never happen.
Yeah.
Apart from sketching, though, I'm curious to know if you've got any other top tips on how to tackle those creative blocks as well.
Changing what you're doing. So whether that's, you know, just going for a walk and having a think, refreshing your mind, going to bed is always good. Although I'm not very good at doing that one myself. I can just work endlessly, it seems. But I always find that, you know, if I'm sat there staying late because I really need to get this job finished or whatever, I'll often find that if I just go to bed and wake up and do it in the morning, I'll do it in half an hour instead of 4 hours.
Yeah.
So just giving your brain time to refresh and, you know, not think about the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think having fresh eyes is like insanely important as a designer, and you know, being able to come at something fresh without all the kind of thoughts around it that you've already got, your own biases towards the idea. And
the having that test is often the thing that's overshadowed or overlooked, because as mm-hmm. you say, you come back at it in the morning with a fresh set of eyes, and you maybe come back in with another idea or a different angle or just a craft thought to push things further.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a muscle, isn't it? It needs to be used,
mm-hmm.
but you don't want to overuse it, otherwise it gets tired out.
Yeah.
Breakthrough is often associated really with finding that solution or the hairs that stand up on the back of your neck. There's something in that feels, can already feel it in a way, and nailing that idea. For you as a designer, as a lettering artist, a typographer, and working in the creative industry, when does your mind start to shift into that feeling of, I'm starting to crack this or breaking
yep.
this problem, or breaking out into finding that solution? When does that start to occur for you, or is it different within different project types?
For me, it's very kind of sudden. It's a kind of sudden realization that like this is the right thing. And yeah, like I said, I'll sketch a lot of stuff and I'll have lots of ideas, and I'll always know when it's a good one, because you just get a feeling. You kind of feel like, you know, you're suddenly very excited to take this idea and run with it, and you just get really confident and passionate about it. And I think that's certainly what you get when, you know, you've really landed on something that's got potential.
Yeah, I mean, also you get excited, but also there's a kind of a release in your mind, which is that, well, maybe it's the dopamine effect.
Yeah.
Ironically, all the positive vibes are going off. This is feeling good. This is getting into an interesting territory.
Yeah.
You kind of feel it in a way, don't you? It's tangible.
I can always tell when it's there, like towards the end of a job, because I'll be very excited about presenting it. And so I always aim for that level of passion with everything that I present, because I know that it'll take the pressure off me.
You know, when someone is presenting something, be it in an internal review or in the client presentation, where they're not 100% into it.
Yeah.
Because it comes across how they're presenting the idea. If you can stand behind the work that you've produced and have passion, blood, sweat and tears involved in it, but more importantly, you know that it's the right solution, then you can stand behind it wholeheartedly and it comes across in the room.
It's confidence again. It's the number one thing for kind of selling in good work. And if you're confident about it and people trust your opinion, then they'll go with it too. And they'll be more willing to take a risk or, you know, just try something new, I guess. If I don't feel like that about something, I wouldn't present it, I don't think, because I wouldn't feel right.
I think it's always a challenge though, isn't it? Because you could be up against it, not enough time, not enough budget, and you know that there's probably an extra 5 or 10% required to take it to that next level.
Mm.
Do you tend to push back at that point?
I mean, I try to always make sure I've got enough time on the job before, because, you know, to even to spend time just thinking and sketching, because if I feel rushed at the start of the job, then I just know that the work won't be as good as it can be. So that's kind of how I'd say it to the client. I'd say, yes, I can do it in 3 days, but you'll get one route instead of three potentially. And, you know, you just have to go with it. Or, you know, it's better for you now to give me a week or two to just spend time thinking about it and showing you something that's actually right. It's the best place for them to spend their money on design is like when you're kind of, you know, doing that stage at the start.
Yeah, but it's also interesting how certain clients think that design is something that you see that's tangible, that's on a PDF, but not necessarily the thinking that's gone into what's being produced.
Yeah, it's kind of upsetting when that's the case. And I always try, and when I'm presenting my work, because I know people come from different backgrounds and people don't always have the same attitude towards design. And a lot of the time, the clients that I work with are from very different backgrounds, and they are used to seeing more kind of tangible results and statistics behind things and reasons for why things are the way they are. And, you know, if you're a good designer, you have a reason for everything that you do. So I really think that if you kind of explain this thinking and show these clients why you've done every little bit of it, I find them much more kind of responsive and much more willing to kind of go ahead with the work because, you know, they can see why I've done it.
I think the more those things are shared, then it becomes a richer conversation and almost a more fruitful conversation in terms of presenting and selling through an idea.
And it's more kind of collaborative, isn't it? And it's just, I think when you see something cold, you can only take it for what it is and you don't know the thinking that's gone into it. You know, whether you're a creative or kind of on the other side as a client, it's really hard to kind of just suddenly understand why something is good or why something's the way it is. So showing it as a kind of process and something that builds up, I think is really valuable. Yeah. And it can really give the client a lot of confidence in you as well. Because maybe you'll put something on screen right at the start, which, you know, was your starting point. Say it's a typeface, for example, and their first reaction as they're seeing this pop up on the screen is, mm-hmm. you know, oh dear, why has he done this? And that's a great feeling because that's something to kind of build from. And as you kind of show the rationale for why, like, you know, where it started and where it got to and the reasons why you didn't make it this mm-hmm. kind of typeface, the reasons you didn't do this, kind of taking them on a journey. By the end of that journey, if you've done your job right, then they'll be fully into it as you are.
What would you say has been one of the most challenging brick wall projects from an idea perspective? A project or a logo idea or a specific brief that you really, really struggled with, that you actually broke through and it ended up being XYZ?
I can tell you one that was actually Z, if that helps. Of those three options.
The Z stories are, I think, sometimes the most interesting ones.
Yeah. Well, it was literally a Z. I was designing a Z. It's not like a job as such, but it was one of the letters that I was doing for 36 Days of Type in the last series that I did. I was literally doing these on the day, every day. I decided the day before that I was going to do it.
And it's a massive commitment.
It's a huge commitment, yeah.
So I applaud anyone for doing this.
You get like 18 days in and you've been doing it for more than, you know, 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
And then you know halfway there, it's crazy. Yeah. It really is difficult, especially if you want each one to be beautiful and, you know, well thought through. So luckily last year it started just as the pandemic had hit Amsterdam, so I had a lot of free time to spend a bit of time on it. Anyway, so this story, I guess, is it's very kind of focused in on one of those letters. And I one of the trickier ones that I did was Z, and I spent, you know, way too long on it. I don't think I was working that day, and I probably spent the whole day and more trying to, you know, sketched a few things, and I was like, oh, that one looks kind of cool, let's progress with it, before actually thinking about why I shouldn't progress with that one. And I basically spent, you know, hours and hours trying to make it look right, trying to shade it differently, trying to different colors and stuff. And the sketch looked great, but the realized final thing just looked so, so rubbish. I just kept trying to force it to work. Mm-hmm. And it got to, you know, probably like 2 a.m. or something. And I was like, okay, that's good now. Went to bed, woke up, and it's terrible. And then I just like, you know, I had a fresh eyes. I could see it for what it was. And I went back to the sketchbook, drew something in, you know, 5 minutes that was better. And I thought it through a bit more, worked it up in, you know, half an hour or an hour or so. And then that was one of my favorite ones out of the whole set. Mm-hmm. I was just trying to force something that wasn't meant to be. And I really think kind of listening to your gut and listening to that niggling feeling in the back of your head is like an amazing thing to be able to train yourself to do, mm-hmm. and to really kind of like prize out why, you know, why is this not good? And like you really kind of listening to yourself and, you know, you can prevent that from happening if you listen earlier.
Yeah, you got to go with that feeling and maybe just pause it or park it. I was also thinking, you know, maybe all the brick walls that we come up against don't necessarily need to be smashed to pieces and broken down. Maybe you can just leave that wall up and go around it to get to another idea, and that's totally fine.
Yeah, sometimes it's the only thing to do. If sometimes you're just trying to force it to work and it's just not working, you just need to walk away from it and just get over it and just not be too in love with something that isn't right.
They almost become little monuments.
Absolutely. I think that's such a good thing to kind of train yourself to do if you can do it, because it can save you a lot of heartache.
Yeah.
In general, actually, just not being too attached to anything you do, I think, is important. I know it's difficult because you throw everything into it.
I mean, you've mentioned, obviously, the joy of sketching and the ability to sketch things down before jumping on a Mac, which I think any creative person should be doing.
Mm.
I'm just curious to know what are the practical tools you can suggest for how to minimize these brick walls, or how to kind of navigate around them in the day-to-day process of idea generation.
Giving yourself time to think and not just kind of rushing straight to the computer to, you know, get on Pinterest and stuff is just such a big one, because the second you start looking at all the amazing work that other people have done, not only does it kind of knock your confidence, because no one's just drawn that straight away. You know, it's taken weeks and, you know, a full agency of 50 people to do it. So especially if you're working by yourself, don't kind of look at that. But also it kind of, it knocks your confidence a bit, and it's all been done as well. So like, why would you want to be doing something that's been done already? If the ultimate goal is to do something different and do something creative and, you know, give your client a bespoke solution to their bespoke problem, then why would the answer be on Pinterest somewhere? So I 100% think, you know, I try not to look at any reference at the start of every job. And I think it can really help you to just, you know, see what comes out of your brain. And, you know, and if you get really stuck, then sometimes it can be helpful to flick through a few pictures and see how other people have done a logo or whatever. But, you know, that's kind of last resort, really. I'd rather spend 3 days sketching 1,000 things than kind of doing that, because eventually something will be good. So I think that's all to do with trusting the process and thinking kind of what's the worst that could happen as well. We're just kind of designing things at the end of the day. We're not kind of saving lives or anything. Kind of think it's kind of good to have a bit of realness about what it is we're doing, and not kind of get too stressed or too worked up about it, because stuff does work out if you're hardworking and you're collaborative and you don't have a huge ego that you're trying to kind of hold up in a meeting. If you're a nice person and you're nice to people, you let people in, let people say their opinions, and you're like really hardworking and you're always kind of striving for it to be good, and the clients can see that as well, then it will be okay. It'll work out. And if it doesn't, it wasn't right, and that's fine as well. And also what's the worst that can happen, I think, is just an important thing to keep reminding yourself of, because, you know, everyone's just doing their own thing, aren't they? And nothing's going to go that wrong, especially if you're working by yourself. Obviously, there's less pressure if there's like not kind of huge multi-million-pound brands involved.
The biggest pressure we put on ourselves is from ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to trust more in the process of creating ideas and the process of design rather than our own mental thoughts.
Yeah, trust the process and just enjoy it as well. Like, we've got like an amazing job where we just can draw and think and work with people, and it's brilliant, and it's such a fun job. So just kind of enjoying the process and not being stressed about it is such a big one as well, because no one's going to create like the best design ever when they're really stressed about creating the best design ever. They're going to do it when, you know, they're enjoying themselves, they're being creative. You know, it'll happen organically. You just need to let it happen. And you know, the more you let that happen and the more you can see it working, the more you'll trust that process and the more you'll have confidence in the ability to do that. So you don't ever need to kind of really worry at all.
Well, I really want to thank you for your time this afternoon, Alec. It's really genuinely a pleasure to talk with you. and a fellow northerner
yeah.
in this stunning city. And I think a lot of people will identify with some of the themes within this. And hopefully it helps people.
I hope so, yeah. Really think it's a great thing that you're talking about here, and people need to be listening to this stuff and thinking about it and being aware of it, you know, in their career and in their general life. So,
yeah,
thanks for bringing it to attention.
Oh, a pleasure. And let's get out and have a beer and enjoy the sunshine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thanks, man.
Cheers, mate.
This podcast was brought to you by the Department of Proactiveness and was recorded in accordance with the social distancing rules. If you are a brand interested in sponsoring future episodes of DOPA, or you simply want to get in touch, please email info@thedopa.com. Don't forget to follow and subscribe.